Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. I'm just kind of really happy here. It says Tammy and I, we started this thing over 6 years ago. So the hosts of the show, all at once, just two of us for the next 53 minutes talking about the phased retirement, Tammy's latest GovExec column, some comments on the Roth TSP, adding to the TSP, not from your salary, and any calls you might want to make to us. Take advantage of this opportunity, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. And, of course, I didn't introduce Tammy, not that she needs it. Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, GovExec columnist, knower of all things federal as it relates to benefits, and she's a closet financial planner, too. Good morning, Tammy.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Good to be here.
Yeah. All righty, Tammy, let's come storming out of the box. Phased retirement. I read it, and then I always, of course, ask you, Tammy, how does this really work? Mm-hmm. But everybody doesn't have that access. I'm a lucky one. In a nutshell, and then specific.
Okay. Well, actually, what I think people need to know is this is law now. July 6th, the president signed the law that allows for employees to go into a phased retirement, which I'm calling retorking, because it's retired partially and working partially.
So that's your word.
I'm coining that word, retorking. So let's see if it catches on. But anyway, the thing is, it's not available yet. Even though the law has passed, it's going to be a while before OPM can implement it and allow people to actually take advantage of this. So I think during this time, while we're waiting for it to become available, we ought to start thinking about what it is and what it would allow somebody to do that you can't currently do. Because as we stand, you know, employees retire all the time and they work after they retire. Some of them even come back to work in their same federal jobs. You know, we now have that dual compensation waiver where employees can take their retirement, come back to their federal position, sometimes within the same agency, on occasion with a different agency. But in those cases, it's a very limited appointment. They don't earn additional retirement benefits, but the beauty of those is that they can still earn their full annuity. So that's one option. You know, employees can become reemployed annuitants without the salary offset. The other thing employees have done, you know, for years is they retire from federal service and go to work in the private industry. You know, they can go work anywhere they want and collect their retirement benefit and collect another salary. So that's available for employees. But how this is different is this allows an employee to continue working in their same position, only cut back their hours to 50%. So you'd only be working 20 hours a week instead of 40 hours a week. But at the same time you'd be doing that, you'd also be collecting 50% of your retirement. So you're collecting part of your retirement, you're part of your salary, and you're continuing to earn additional retirement benefits and some of the benefits of continuing to work.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Is it only 50-50, or could you do 25-75, or one-third, two-thirds? It's 50-50 or nothing.
Well, initially, according to OPM, they've put out a little bit of information about this for agencies to distribute to their employees. Initially, they're going to limit it to 50-50 just for simplicity in the administration of the program. The law allows flexibility as 20%, 80%, or 30%, 70%, but initially it's going to be 50-50 or nothing until they expand the program later time.
Okay, so somebody, I won't say on the fence about retirement, but that certainly would be a target here and say, okay, I'll test the waters. But of course, once they test them, they can't go back to full time.
They could, actually. Yeah, the employee, this has to be a mutually agreeable decision between the employer and the employee to actually go into a phased retirement situation. But if the employee decides they want to return to full-time work, that this phased retirement's not working, then if their employer is agreeable, they can put them back on full-time, and that period of time would just be treated as a part-time period of service.
Is there I'll call it a burn-in time. Is there kind of a limit that once I've done this within a certain number of years, I have to do it or not do it? In other words, if I can go back after, say, a year and say, I really would like to go back full time, or I'd like to switch off and become retired. But is there an end line where I can no longer say I want to pull back or I want to accelerate?
Not that I've seen. I mean, there may be that because the final regulations have not been issued on this yet. The law has passed. There are some details out there, but that I haven't seen. So I'm not sure if there will be those kind of limits or not. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. So somebody then could draw half their annuity, half their salary. And if you don't mind, let's slice into the salary first, then they could still fully maximize the TSP, even though their salary is in half, but they could still put in the max, depending on their age. Of course, not many are retiring before 50, but some do. I was out at a group that you were last week that 50 would be an older age to retire. anyway, so they
But law enforcement can't do it. Anybody subject to mandatory retirement would be exempt from this proposal.
Really?
Yeah, so it's only for employees who are eligible for regular optional retirement. That's employees under civil service who are 55 with 30 years or 60 with 20 years. And under FERS, it's almost the same, but it's instead of saying 55, it's minimum retirement age with 30 years of service or 60 with 20. So you have to be currently eligible for that type of retirement.
Okay, so law enforcement need not apply. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot. Would that include air traffic controllers?
Any special groups. Anybody subject to mandatory retirement, which would be firefighters, law enforcement, air traffic controllers, they've been exempt from the program.
Okay. So if they could afford to do that, of course, I look at things finance and tax-wise. That's a lot of money out of the half that's there because the annuity and then after that, they may not be able to afford it, but they may take a look at maybe not doing the whole amount, but a lot more than what X percent would be on half the income. Because you can quote, what do you call that term? Front load the thrift?
Oh, for as far as the TSP?
Yeah,
you can put the full amount in the TSP, even if you're only working part-time. So I would imagine, again, I'm kind of visualizing this in the future, but I'm imagining you'd be able to do that as well with the phased benefit, because it is available for employees to still contribute to the thrift. That was in the legislation, so I would imagine that's going to continue to be available for employees who do this.
And in fact, it may enhance, not for all, but for some, the Roth TSP, because the Roth TSP is very expensive for somebody in the latter part of their career because they're at their highest pay level, and the taxes are hard to overcome. But here, the tax of the two would not be as great as the tax on the whole of the salary. In other words, half the annuity and half...
Right. I can go through like a quick example of this.
Please do.
I think it would make it easier for employees to understand how this would work.
And me too.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say we have an employee who's 55 years old. She's got 32 years of service, which would entitle her to a civil, let's say she's CSRS in this case. So it would entitle her to a civil service retirement benefit equal to about 60% of her high three. So let's say that her high three, just to make this a simple example to understand, I'm going to use a high salary because I can divide and multiply easier. But let's say that her salary is $100,000. Make it simple. You can cut that in half or double it, whatever you need to do for yourself. But anyway, so here she is. So she's got 32 years service, a salary of $100,000. And so her retirement would be $60,000 a year, 60% of the salary, basically the high three, which is currently your salary for many employees. So her retirement benefit, if she was retiring fully, would be $60,000 a year. Her salary, if she kept working, would be $100,000. Now, if she decides to retorking, retire and keep working, then she would receive half of that salary for working 20 hours a week, which would be $50,000 a year, and half of her retirement, which is $60,000, would cut back to $30,000. So the $30,000 plus the $50,000 salary, that would be income coming in of $80,000 a year. But as you pointed out, some of that's retirement income, which you wouldn't be taxed in exactly the same way as you would for your salary. And half of that would be salary, which would mean you are still working, so you can still contribute to the TSP, either the Roth or the traditional. Your insurance, health benefits, and life insurance premiums would be deducted from the salary portion, which for the health benefit would be pre-tax dollars, which you don't get on your retirement check. And you could still continue to contribute, to FedVIP and long-term care. So all the insurances you had as employees, you would continue to maintain during this period of time. Now, down the road, let's say that she does this for, 5 years, period of time, then her annuity would be increased because there would be cost of living adjustments added to it, plus another 5 years of service that she would have worked during this part-time period of time. So her retirement actually would have gone up. So instead of $60,000 a year, let's say it goes up to $66,000 a year. So in the end, her retirement that was $60,000 now has gone up by $6,000 a year. Plus, she's earned a higher salary combined with her partial retirement during those 5 years that she was retiring and working part-time. So in the end, I think she comes out ahead, and it allowed her to kind of ease into retirement, not go cold turkey from full salary to retirement, and also didn't require her to go out and look for another job. You know, she's already in the job. She could just continue doing that same job and spend part of her time mentoring her replacement and doing the work of the agency.
Okay, could I ask you one question on that? Now, she is now working half-time, and if she stayed on for a period of time, even though working half-time, she would get a full year's credit towards the multiplier.
That's the part that I'm not clear on. I think it would be 50% for the year because she's working 50% of the time.
So
but I've read
think,
it both ways.
Yeah, okay.
I've read the interpretation of it both ways. So that part, I'm
sorry.
Not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. But those are questions we still have.
Okay.
That I still have. Anyway.
Yeah,
that's maybe somebody knows the answer, but I don't.
That would be a great deal. But, you know, more will come out, like you say, and you stay on top of this. And I see emails between you and other folks that are
I'm trying
influence.
To find out as much as I can because I find it a very fascinating option. I think it could be to the advantage of both the employer, allowing them to keep the employee on board longer, and also to the employee who really does want to retire. They have enough service to retire. It would have to be an employee who's financially ready to retire because their income is going to go down when they go into this period. And eventually their plan should be to retire fully. You know, I don't think they're going to want to do this for 20 more years. So it would be somebody who's ready to retire but not quite ready to fully retire. And I think there's a lot of people in that boat. I did a conference for FEW, the Federally Employed Women, last week, and I had a group of about 45 women in my session. And I asked them, I said, you know, after I explained what this was, I said, how many of you would be interested to do this? And I would say probably 75% of the hands went up. Now, not that they would do it, but they had an interest. They thought it sounded interesting to them. So it'll be neat to see.
Good test. Maybe we should do that at the seminars, too, just as...
Or even today, if anybody wants to call in and let us know if you would like to do this retorking.
That's a great idea. What are your apprehensions? What are your positives? And nobody needs to ever identify themselves on this show.
Or email us if you don't want to do it that way. We'd be really curious. I'm going to follow this until it comes into place and see how it actually plays out.
Okay. For those of you that would like to email us, you can at 4FOR, your, Y-O-U-R, benefit at NITPINC.com. For your benefit, which it is, at NITPINC.com. NITP is the company that underwrites the show and presents the show on lots of seminars, and this is kind of our way to pay back the nice things the federal government and the employees have done for us over the 29 almost years.
Holy smokes, that's a long time. That's almost a career.
Yeah, and how long you and I can never...
Since 1988, so what's that make it, 24 years?
Yeah, my God, silver anniversary coming up here.
That's right. I get a pen.
Well, somebody else has got to get one first, I think, or I'm in deep trouble. She's probably listening.
Every year we have the inside joke about the company pin.
Yeah.
Because government employees always get a pin on their anniversary. We don't.
We don't.
No.
No.
Not yet.
Okay.
We're still holding out hope.
Now I've been publicly flogged. All righty. So what else could we say about phased retirement?
We really don't know. Like, you know, a lot of people may want to do this now because I've been getting emails from people saying, do you think it's a good idea if I start this next month? Well, it's like, yeah, it might be, but you can't because we're waiting for the regulations to be published and OPM to actually put it into place. Just like it reminds me of whenever the law passed in 2009 allowing for the TSP to offer a Roth option. Well, that didn't become available to employees until May of this year. So it took a while, you know, payroll offices had to get up to speed and publications had to be updated and training had to occur. So there's going to be some time between the actual implementation and when the law actually passed. So I don't know if it's going to take 3 years this time, but it may take 6 months, you know, it may take a year. I don't know how long it's going to be. And OPM has not given us any clue as to when that's going to really become available for employees to take advantage of. The other thing, I got an email from someone who retired in 2011 who wants to come back and work phased retirement, and that's also not going to be available. It's only for current employees.
It's fascinating to me. I really don't know any place that does this, but it seems to me beneficial to keep your, so you don't have the proverbial brain drain. It's attractive for somebody that isn't so sure that they want to retire, but it's kind of like they don't have to dive off the board. They can walk back down if they want, or they can jump off and still get out of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice, and earn retirement credits for it.
Yeah, I think all the way around, it's a winner for someone who fits that description of being ready to retire financially and mentally, but yet not wanting to, you know, leave cold turkey. I think it'd be perfect for that individual.
Yeah, it probably would reduce the somebody's stress level too.
I think so. I think there's must be a study out there that says if you don't retire quickly like that, it's got to be less stressful to ease into it, just like anything else that you might do that's a big life event.
All righty.
Into marriage. How do you do that? into divorce. Let me think of all the life events.
They eased into marriage, in the 70s when people could live together being
and a test
shamed.
Drive yeah. each other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe this is the same type of thing.
Okay. Latest GovExec column. What did we do last week?
Week was the phased retirement, okay. So we covered that. But this week, I've got something kind of interesting because I've been doing this at seminars. I tell people that are concerned and worried about the congressional changes, all the proposals for the high 3 to the high 5, the pay freeze, the change in the COLA adjustment for retirees, all these different things that we hear in Congress, the increase to the retirement age, the increase to the contribution. I mean, we could go on and on about all the things that are proposed that could detrimentally affect federal employees as far as their retirement goes. So I've been telling employees that over the past 30 years that I've been watching Congress and what they do to federal benefits, to tell you the truth, I haven't seen that many negative changes. Most of them have been improvements. I mean, I've seen those same proposals, but as far as the ones that become law, like, for example, this phased retirement, to me, that's an improvement. That's making life better for the federal employee. So I have a lot of employees who challenge me on that. How could that be? There have to be negative changes that have occurred in the last 30 years, and there have been some. But for the most part, I'd say 10 to 1, they're positive. So what I plan to do this week is to go back through the last at least 25 years that I've saved my federal almanacs that do a review of the past laws that have changed. And I'm going to go back and make a list of all the things that have impacted federal employees as far as their retirement. And see which ones are positive, which ones are negative. And I always also say that, these changes in the law for retirement keep me in business, because if the laws didn't change, nobody would need help planning their retirement other than financially. But for understanding the benefits, I think the one downside to changes in the law that it makes things more complicated, because then we have to say before this date, it's that way. After this date, it's this way. And we have to make those changes almost annually for things that do get updated, but they're not all negative.
No, they're not. And I don't know how you keep that, if you started after such and such a date, and you did this and you did that, well, there's special exception. And, I'm a tax type, and I'd like to think taxes are easier than what you do.
That I was hoping, FERS does sort of simplify it a little bit, because with FERS, there's not as much history, so not as many things have changed. So it's a little easier to understand the basic FERS benefit. To plan your retirement under FERS is more complicated, because now you have to coordinate the basic pension benefit with Social Security income, with your investment income from your savings. So you have to make sure between those three sources of income that you have enough to be able to afford to retire. And that's where I think a lot of people need some help with understanding how that all fits together.
Now, for those of you listening that have not read Tammy's article in GovExec, do yourself the proverbial favor, and it comes out every Friday, GovExec, but you can read it on our website. Back 6 years?
6 years. It'll be seven, going on seven pretty soon.
And you're good enough to put an index each year so that somebody doesn't have to look through 6 years of weekly articles, which isn't hard, but if you really want to zero in on an issue. And it's on NITPINC.com.
Yep. Every January I do the index where I kind of group the columns together over different subheadings like survivor benefit elections, health insurance, eligibility for retirement, so that there's, you know, maybe four or five different columns on that subject. So it's a nice resource, I think, that employees have. And I always give credit to Tom Shoup, the editor, because I'm not a writer, but I send him a draft on usually Monday or Tuesday, and by the time it's published Friday, it's something that's actually usable and readable. So that it's a good partnership.
You're too modest. I see both sides of it. And going in there, it's pretty good. And,
wow.
And Tom makes it shorter, so it doesn't...
Shorter and sweeter.
And he is the man with that.
Mm-hmm. Very good editor.
What are you looking at in the future for articles? Got any things you want to cover?
I get my ideas for the column from the seminars we teach. Because, you know, you hear the same questions. They tend to come up over and over again. You're like, well, there's got to be confusion on that topic. So that's usually what I zone in on and write about that week. Or it's something that people just seem like they have a different understanding than the way things really are. And I'll try to explain things that hopefully make it more clear when you have to make a decision, whether it's electing survivor benefits or paying a deposit or even choosing the date to retire. You know, that's always a popular column. Now we're getting towards the end of summer and the fall's coming with the health benefit open season. So I do write a lot about health insurance and retirement and choosing health plans to go with Medicare. So that's probably going to be some of the fall topics as usual. But these last few weeks of the summer, I'm not quite sure. So again, if there's something somebody wants me to write about or something that's really confusing to you, let me know, because that's how I get my ideas.
All right. Remember the website or the email site, foryourbenefit@nitpinc.com. Let's take a look at the Roth TSP. When I do my seminars, although I only do 3 hours and you do six, but the Roth TSP is still, I won't say a mystery, but people are just, I think they don't fully understand it, so they back away from it because it sounds like it's tax expensive, which it is. So that if you look at, I'm going to date myself as I usually do, a seesaw, you know, it's perfectly balanced in the center, but on one side of the seesaw, it's very low. You might look at that as an individual's taxes if they fully maximize the other side, and it's very high, the amount of money that goes into the traditional TSP. Now, that seesaw changes if they want to put the same max in, but their taxes aren't going to be on the low side. They're going to be on the high side. So the actual money that has to be spent out of their pocket is going to be whatever they want to put into the Roth TSP, but they're going to have to pay the taxes on it going in up front. That's Greg Long. I thought it was great. Pay me now or pay me later, when he was on right after the launch. So that's the deal. Somebody maybe later in their career at a higher tax bracket might not find this as attractive as somebody mid to beginning of a career, because their taxes aren't as high. Of course, the cash flow isn't as necessarily as good as somebody pre-retirement. But that would be the crux of it. It's in theory, the money, not in theory, in actuality, the money's invested kind of in the same profile regardless.
What about the situation for a CSRS employee who has enough retirement in their civil service annuity, as many of them do? You know, if you've got 35 years to 40 years of government service, then your retirement check is probably most likely paying your monthly bills in and of itself. So in addition to that, these are employees who have been saving in the TSP, some of them since 1987, who have amassed a pretty large sum of money. And some of them may be still working another couple of years. So for these employees who that money that's in the TSP is money that they really don't need day to day, they may want to leave it to their kids or leave it to their favorite charity down the road, would that be somebody who might want to do the Roth TSP, or would there be other issues?
If they have the cash flow to max it, I would say. The minimum maximum is the, 17,000, right?
Right.
But it could go up to as much as
22.5 because of the catch up.
So whatever their sweet spot there is, but let's say this individual is in a 25 or let's say a 25% federal income tax bracket. And if they're in a state with a state income tax, probably another 5 on top of it. So 30% of what used to go into the thrift went in there and their taxes were reduced. Now it's the other way around.
Yeah, their taxes were reduced by about $6,000 or $7,000 on that maximum contribution. So they got to come up with an extra $6,000 or $7,000 if they want to do the Roth.
If they want to do the max.
After tax. Yeah.
Now, some, for whatever reason, and I'm not so sure that I agree with it, want to do it because it's tax-free income in the future. And unfortunately, this is the tax tail wagging the entire dog. But if they're just, you know, heaven-bent on doing this, they could do it. But I don't know that I would put the entire amount in, because exactly like you say, you want to put $22,000 or $17,000. That's a lot of money. That's
and plus, if
out.
You really didn't expect to use it yourself, like you probably want the tax break while you can enjoy it, and then if you leave it to somebody else, let them worry about the taxes, right? If you leave the TSP to a charity, does the charity have to pay the tax on it?
Now, see, this is your financial planner.
Yeah, I'm thinking ahead. I'm trying to think of some of the alternatives here.
Well, if one of the attorneys were here, Mark being the one that I can remember the most, he would say, well, now there is an estate, and in your estate would be your TSP. We're going to forget about all the other things. Mm-hmm. Now, included in the TSP, the traditional TSP, none of that money has ever been taxed.
Right.
It is part of the estate that may or may not be subject to estate tax, but there's one thing certain. It is subject to income tax, whoever might inherit it.
Even if it's like a church or a charity of some
sort? An individual.
An individual, okay.
So if it's a person, they're going to pay taxes on it, not all at once. Mm-hmm. It would be spread out over their lifetime if they so desire, or if they want to take it's up to them. Mm-hmm. Most people don't want to do that. However, most people, when looking at their estate, would say, listen, I have certain people I want to get whatever's left, and I want certain organizations to get it, and let's talk about charitable organizations. So if there was a charitable desire, this ought to be the money that goes to them, because although it is part of the estate, it would go to the charitable organization, and they would pay no income taxes on it.
Okay.
And whereas if you or I were the beneficiary of the estate, we'd say, I think it's a good idea for it to go to the charity first, because we would like to inherit the other and pay no income taxes on it.
Exactly.
Because it can't be double taxed. Remember, it can't be subject to estate tax and income tax.
So if you had money that you had in a bank and you had money in the TSP and it was an equal amount of money, you'd leave the TSP to the charity so that they wouldn't have to pay the tax on it, and then leave your other money to your family.
So they don't have to pay taxes on it.
Oh, this is great. Okay.
So you're right on target with that, or some balance thereof. But the first money, if you have a charitable desire, should be money that somebody else would have to pay taxes on, and mainly the TSP, potentially a traditional IRA, definitely not a Roth IRA, because Roth IRAs aren't subject to income tax. Generally, there's an exception for everything I'll probably ever say for the rest of my life and prior to this day. There's a special exception for potentially a Roth IRA if it had not been in there for at least 5 years.
Yeah, there are some specific rules for withdrawing that and getting it out tax-free that you have to meet, I guess, both of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that to me is when I do it in class, and actually I don't spend a ton of time on it in class because to do it justice, it would take most of the class. I won't say most. It would take an hour out of the three. So what we did is we did two shows on this, right? One with Greg. That was the second one. The first show is that's just on the Roth TSP. And it was the real basics. We called it Roth TSP 101. And we spent about an hour on it. And then the next week, Greg and tax counsel, as well as the director of external affairs, came on, and we did not talk way out in the weeds or the clouds. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't 101.
Right.
And it was a very frank discussion. And
that's still archives. You can listen to it.
It sure is. It's a lot of all of these shows are archived, right. But that's a good one for somebody who just wants to bone up. And again, if they don't fully understand it, they can email us.
Right.
And we can give them the answer. We can't give you an answer should you do it, but we can
point
smooth
out the
rough edges
and disadvantages and the tax ramifications, because there's a lot of little issues to think about when you're trying to decide between the two, and you have to be careful in terms of how you're going to take the money out, what you're going to do with it after you retire, as well as the real immediate tax advantage of saving pre-tax dollars, which was the big attraction to the thrift, I think, for CSRS employees in the first place, because you could always save money, but saving it with pre-tax dollars was something very limited opportunity. So I think you'll see most of our old system CSRS employees probably still staying with the traditional, wouldn't you think?
I would say yes. And some of those, though, maybe there's a dual-income family, they can't have a Roth IRA. So this allows them to get something in a Roth if they so desire. Mm-hmm. And I get people in class, I've got a year to go, what do you think? And to be frank, I say, listen, you're going to, if this is the most you'll ever put in it, this is just another piece of paper you're going to get at the end of the month that may not have a lot of money in it. You might be better off trying to transfer some money into a Roth IRA, which we spent a lot of time on how you can do it where you otherwise wouldn't think that you could in class.
And the Roth TSP is still going to be subject to those required minimum distributions after 70 and a half unless you transfer it to a Roth IRA.
Everybody hear that? Okay, so the Roth TSP is subject to minimum distributions like a traditional IRA.
Or the traditional TSP.
Or the traditional TSP. But if you move it out of the Roth TSP to a Roth IRA, there is no mandatory distribution.
Which means you could leave it there indefinitely.
Until you pass. And then the heir would have to have mandatory distributions, but spread out over a pretty significant period of time. So it's got some really nice pieces to it.
But currently you can't separate, like you couldn't say, I want to just take my Roth TSP and transfer it to my Roth IRA and leave the rest of my TSP alone because it's going to come out pro rata.
Exactly.
It's the downside to that. It's mirrored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing we talk about in class and is about adding money to the TSP, not from your salary. And people look at me like, you've got two heads. And I go, no. And so we walk through it. I've got a little graphic we do in class. But I also supplement it by saying, if you don't believe me, the next page is the form that allows you to do it. And by the way, this form, for those of you listening, this is very important. All TSP forms were changed April 2012. Right. And this one in particular is TSP 60. Do not use the prior one. They won't accept it. And why was everything changed in April? In anticipation of the launch of the Roth. So everything had to mention the Roth. So publications had to be redone. Statements had to be redone. And so did the forms. But let's just forget about the Roth TSP for a second. Can you add money to your TSP from sources outside of your federal salary? And the answer is yes. A traditional IRA, not all of it necessarily, but the taxable portion can be transferred from the traditional IRA to the traditional TSP. Now, why can people do that? Well, the traditional TSP, as we talked about, you know, right when we first started doing this, is fully tax deductible. So everything in there is fully taxable. So they will only accept then fully taxable money from, say, a traditional IRA, or if somebody else had come to work for the government and they had some other type of plan, a prior employer's 401k plan, or sometimes they call these 403b plans. They have all kinds of different names, but if they had a tax-sheltered plan, they can move that into the TSP. And, you know, that's great, but they need to ask themselves the question first is, am I doing better in the TSP than I am in the other investment? And if the other investment is doing better, which could be somewhat hard for many people, you don't want to do this. But for those that would like to do it, it's good. And it's also, it hits a sweet spot for somebody that's under, it's between 55 and 59 and a half. If they take money out of a traditional IRA, they're going to pay a penalty on it, mm-hmm. and taxes. Whereas if they transfer that same money into the traditional TSP and they take it out, there is no penalty.
Right. Yeah, the TSP 60 also goes into detail about that as well. So if somebody was wanting to transfer money from their old employer's 401k or another IRA that they might have, there's two pages of instructions that really define what types of money the TSP will accept into both the traditional and the Roth. And they also define the difference between transferring directly from that account, making a direct transfer, versus receiving a payment from that account and rolling it over.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's different.
It loses some weight. It loses 20% of its weight.
Because the employer has to, by law, has to withhold 20% withholding and then you want to transfer 100%, so that rollover is going to have to be short a little bit.
Yeah, I do that in class with a little graphic, because the verbal, sometimes people go, huh? And then they say, oh, no, I don't think I want that.
Yeah, the other thing that's kind of a little bit confusing, I've found, at least from a few people that I've talked to who've tried to take withdrawals from the TSP, and the two forms, the TSP 70, which is a request for full withdrawal, and then the TSP 77, which allows separated employees to do a partial withdrawal from the thrift. And I've had even a financial planner contact me about that, saying, well, how do I get my client to take just half of their TSP account and move it without touching the Roth portion? Well, you can't. I mean, it has to go from both. It's going to be pro rata. So you got to read those forms very carefully, because they've expanded. In fact, they've doubled in size because of the Roth, because you're going to have to make decisions on both your Roth portion and your traditional portion when you want to take withdrawals.
Okay, and let's look at on that on both sides as well. Once people leave federal service, they can add money to the TSP, but it would have to come first and probably foremost would be the traditional IRA's fully taxable amount. But if they went to a second career, although they might not want to after the beginning of today's show, but if they did go to a second career outside of the federal sector and they were in a 401k plan or the like, and they weren't enamored with it, they could move it over to the traditional TSP.
Right.
So you can even add to it after retirement.
Mm-hmm. But not out of your retirement check.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but it has to be other money that's already saved for retirement purposes, like IRA money or 401k money that can go into it. Now, I was just looking at the withdrawal form, and the very first thing you have to do is select, what do I want to do with my entire account? And the three choices you have when you make a full withdrawal of the thrift is to take out a single payment, just cash it out, elect a life annuity, basically buying an annuity from an insurance company, or taking a series of monthly payments, either by electing a specific amount or by telling the TSP to compute the payments based on your life expectancy. And you can actually do all three. You can say, I want part of it as a lump sum payment, I want part of it as an annuity, and part of it as a monthly check. Then after you've made that election of your entire 100% of your TSP, then you divide it up between the Roth portion and the traditional portion. So it's you make that first election with the entire account, combined all 10 investment choices of both types of TSP, and then you make your election as far as what do you want, you know, to do with each section separately. So it is a little more confusing than it used to be, I will
admit.
Yeah,
it is. And a couple comments on there. When we talk about it in class, I see, you know, you can pull the money out all at once, and the class looks at me like, why would I ever want to do that? Well, it's a very select group, not because they're select, it's because they're not many of them, can do this and pay very low income tax on it. But they would have to meet two tests. They'd have to get the money out within 1 year of leaving federal service. It's not hard. But the second one, most people would fail. Their birth date has to be before January 2nd, 1936.
That's kind of hard to back up your birth date.
So they go, oh, so why did you do it?
Most people wouldn't want to back it up that far.
So I only bring it up. It takes 45 seconds, but in case they hear it after class, they don't need to listen to it or feel like they didn't get the full skinny.
Yeah.
Then the other thing with the monthly payments, there's two ways to calculate the monthly payments, as I know you know, but I'm not so sure everybody knows. One is to say, I'd like it automatically calculated for me, and I'm effectively being told what I'm going to get based on the value of my TSP at the end of a calendar year divided by my life expectancy per the IRS the next day, January 1st. So here you know you're going to get a monthly payment for life. You can't outlive it. Numerically, you can't outlive it. But initially, if you look at the slope of the line, it will go up a little bit each year or down a little bit each year, but the path, the slope will be upward. But then it's going to hit a plateau. It's going to flatten out, and then it's going to start doing the other. Now, it's never going to fall to zero, but if you live a very long lifetime, I'm not so sure it's going to be a ton of money.
Yeah, the influencing factors on that would be how your balance is either growing or losing money, because you're still invested. You're still in the GC, FS&I as you're taking those payments. So as those accounts fluctuate, that's going to fluctuate your balance at the end of the year. Then the other factor is your life expectancy. Mm. You know, you would think it goes down every year that you get older, but when you turn 70 and a half, it goes up.
Yeah.
And that's an IRS thing.
Yeah, and so it makes you take more out. So that bottom number on the fraction becomes smaller, which means more comes out.
Right. But until you hit 70 and a half, and then the number gets bigger,
yeah,
and you start taking less out, and
right,
that's subjecting yourself to those required minimum distributions.
Right. And the theory there is, years ago, it wasn't that long ago, it was 5 or 6 years ago, if you were a female, that was a 15-year spread. And at 85, you were broke. And males were broke at 12 years. And so actually, this thing is called kind of a stretch. So it stretches the money out over a longer period of time. But the other option with monthly payments, remember there are two. One is based on a repetitive recalculation, but one that really we don't have any control over. The other one is you can tell OPM, excuse
TSP.
Me, TSP, don't call OPM. You can tell TSP what you want on a monthly basis. And you can change your mind currently once a year, and as the folks from the TSP have been so kind to say, is they're looking eventually at being able to do this twice a year. But right now it's once a year until we hear otherwise. So people say it's very restrictive, but you know, in class I said, listen, if in 1 year you know that you need repairs to your roof, you can jack your monthly payment up for the year, pay the expense off, and then bring it back down. Mm-hmm. And the minimum that you have to take out is $25 a month until, like you say, you hit 70 and a half. Or if you needed a car,
you can still do $25 a month after 70 and a half, and then you'll get a supplement at the end of the year to meet your required distribution. So that's a way, if you wanted a once-a-year payment, just take out the lowest possible amount, and then after 70 and a half, you'll get a one-time check at the end of the year.
Right, and you have to get it because IRS has told them to do it, and they always are attentive, and mm-hmm, so are we, as to what IRS is going to tell us. So these are things that just I find in class, it's almost every class. You really can? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be fair, we spend some time on it, and they have a better knowledge when they walk out of the class than when they came in, but they still, you know, it's here, and you and I did a show July 25th on this, just on this, along with the voluntary contribution, so that it's a follow-up, and again, you can email us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to our website, nitpinc.com, and somebody's saying he's pushing the website, yeah, I am. But if you
well,
can find
a lot of information,
if you can find something to buy on it, I'll buy it for you. There is nothing you can buy
other than signing up for a seminar.
Signing up for a seminar, but even then, the agency pays it.
Right.
So we're paid by agencies, and that's it. We don't sell anything. Don't want to sell anything, but we do provide. The government's been good to us. I know it sounds corny, but that's why we do the show, and that's why you don't hear commercials on the show. Anyway, so I think we kind of hit the TSP, Roth TSP. Nobody's calling us. I feel lonely here. 202-465.
They're just listening. They're attentively listening.
3080.
The other new thing this summer that I don't know if everyone's aware of this or not, but Social Security has now expanded their online information, which now includes your online statement. So if everybody remembers that about 3 months before your birthday, you get a statement from Social Security, and you might wonder, why didn't it come this year? Well, it's because it's now online. So to get your Social Security statement, you would go to either socialsecurity.gov or ssa.gov, if that's easier for you to remember. And right there on the home page, it says, get your Social Security statement online. It's even highlighted as new because it is something that just started in the last couple of months. I think we had, who was our Social Security? Lester Austin.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, he came on, and he's just a great
By
personality
the way,
for Social Security.
I don't mean to cut in here. For
yeah.
Those of you all listening, listen to that show.
It's
he
very
is a
good.
Motivational speaker, and he's very knowledgeable. I'm sorry, Tammy.
No, that's okay. He talked about this coming, but I think at the time he was on, the date hadn't been set, but they are now available. And to access your account, just like anything else online, you have to create an account. You know, you got the username and the password, and this is no exception, but it is very handy to have this available so you don't have to remember, where did I file it or did I spill coffee on it? So now you can just, you know, check it online. And then the other thing you can do online, which I find very helpful for employees who are trying to figure out not only when to take their Social Security check, but also when to retire, is they have an estimator. And the estimator is linked to your Social Security historical wage record, so you don't have to enter all the wages in. It comes up. But you can create additional scenarios, such as, what if I stop working when I'm 58? What if I stop working when I'm 67? So you've got that information.
Yeah, I like this site. Now, you probably aren't old enough to even look at it, but I look at mine and
oh, yeah, I do. Hey, wishful thinking.
And some of the things that might not be, it's usually the Medicare that's got some issue with it. And it's not bad, and they fix it. And okay, we got a phone call. Good morning. Hello.
Hello. You gave an example for a phased retirement for a CSRS employee, and I'm wondering if you could give an example for a FERS employee in a similar situation.
That's a good idea, isn't it? Yes, I will, because we do have FERS employees who are now eligible to retire. Did you want to give me some factors for me to do it with, like how much service you have?
It's very similar to the one you had. I have over 30 years. I'm 56 and
perfect.
FERS and eligible.
Okay, well, let me work that one out. So let's say we have an employee who's got, let's say, 30 years under FERS, right? So The basic FERS benefit is 30%, 30 years times 1%, so 30% of your high three. So if I use that same salary I used before, which was $100,000, then that FERS annuity for the full career would be $30,000 a year. Uh-huh. All right, so you go into phased retirement, which means you get half of that. That'd be $15,000. In addition, you would get half your salary, which would be $50,000. So during the period of phased retirement, your income would be $65,000 between the half salary and half phased retirement. Now, at the end of that time, let's say at age 60, 4 years later, you decide to retire. Well, your salary may have gone up. You've got four more years of service. So that $30,000 annuity has now increased by four more years, or at least a portion of four more years. So that $30,000 retirement would be at least probably about 34% or $34,000 at the end of that time. Now, also at age 60, you're not old enough for Social Security, so you would also be entitled to the Social Security supplement or the FERS supplement from age 60 to 62, which would add to that $34,000 income. Now, my understanding is during the time you would be working the part retirement part career, you would not be getting the supplement because you'd be working, and the supplement is tested for outside earnings. So your income during that phased retirement period would be less, it seems, than it would be if you had been CSRS, because number one, you wouldn't be taking distribution of your TSP, you wouldn't be getting the Social Security supplement, so you would still be getting the half salary. So I guess you'd have to do the numbers and see if it was worth it for you to do that versus maybe take your full retirement and go take a job someplace else. Just depends on what your motivation would be for the
phased
retirement.
It's the supplement that hurts, right?
You'd lose the supplement. Plus, you wouldn't have that income. Your TSP would still be growing. You'd still be adding to it. But for the CSRS employee, you know, their whole retirement is civil service. So I can see for those employees where it might be a more, maybe a more advantageous thing. This is going to take some studying to really look at it. But that's something to think about.
And again, you're thinking that the TSP, you'd be able to add to it the full amount, the 22.5.
As long as you could withhold that from your salary that you were receiving, because you can only contribute to the TSP from your income, from your salary, mm-hmm. not from the retirement check. So conceivably, yes, I don't see why you couldn't put the maximum elective deferral limit in the mm-hmm. thrift while you were working, you know, the half schedule.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Great. And we've got another call waiting in line. Good morning.
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
Great show and great course.
Thanks. Well, we try.
Hypothetically, what if you'd have a CSRS employee with approximately 38 years, always contributed the maximum amount to TSP, so there's a fair amount there, approaching 59 and a half within weeks, and have four or five old IRA accounts. I guess my first one is, I just heard you say I could move the old IRA accounts into the TSP. And my real question is, I began working with a financial advisor recently, and he seems to advocate taking all the money out of TSP at 59 and a half and investing it in other options.
Let me do the first question. And just for everybody listening, I think you've got a handle on it, but let's be real clear with what can go into the TSP. When the IRA first started many years ago, you could put money in and you could deduct it, no question. Then that changed a bit in 86, and it probably caught up to many of us in the late 90s, early 2000s, and you couldn't deduct everything you put in. So my question to you, not numbers, but did you ever put money into your IRA where you did not get a tax deduction?
No, I only did it when it originally started.
Yours is easy then. The entire amount can go into the traditional TSP.
Okay.
All right. No tax. Just goes in there and then you can invest it. As to what your financial planner said, I would never, ever second guess a financial planner if I didn't know more. But I think maybe what they're saying is there's more flexibility outside the TSP than inside the TSP. You can somewhat mirror the same investments with the exception of the C.
G.
But then you have other things that you can pick and choose from that are not there. So whether it's all of it or some of it, it provides more flexibility, which is pretty important when you're talking about investing.
Especially for someone, because he was mentioning 38 years of service. So obviously his civil service retirement is his income in retirement. That's probably going to replace, if not all of his salary, most of it. So he's probably looking for the TSP to be flexible in how he uses it. And with the TSP, you can only take one partial withdrawal other than those monthly payment options.
And we taught you how to beat that.
Right. So in his case, he's saying, I'm going to move this to my IRA so I can take multiple partial withdrawals. When something comes up, I take a piece out. When something else comes up, otherwise I can leave it alone. So that's the real, I think, the advantage of the IRA versus the TSP. But you have to stack that up against the administrative expense of the TSP, which is as low as you're going to find, versus the fees for managing this IRA plus the fees for making investment moves. So that's something you'd have to weigh out.
And if you pay more for the fees and they make you more, okay.
Yeah.
If you pay more for the fees and they don't think I want to do that.
And if you like the G fund, as you mentioned, that's the only place you're going to find it in a thrift. So I kind of advocate even 50-50. Do some TSP, some IRA.
Did that answer your question? Because Andrew's going to cut us off if we didn't.
Yes, it did.
Okay, good. Thanks for calling and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All righty, Tammy. We got very few seconds left. Great to see you again.
I wish we had another hour. It sounds like the calls are coming in.
Yeah, we just got them, lit. But we'll try again next time, whenever that might be. Thanks for listening, and we'll be on next week. Good to see you again, Tammy.
I think I'll be back next week.
Oh, my goodness. Yay. Maybe we'll do part two of this. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.